During that time, you've almost or more than doubled the business. You're on track to double it this year while stepping back. So curious to know how the hell you even did that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just getting rid of the bottlenecks. So like identifying what the bottlenecks are. Turns out a lot of the bottlenecks were me. Honestly, just being able to step back and then let our people do their jobs. And it's resulted in me being able to work way more on business development and things that I should be looking at as a business owner. And then allowing our team to just have a whole lot more intrinsic value day in and day out, feeling more fulfilled in their roles because they're seeing the success of their individual hard work.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. At just 30 years old, Riley Rivers owns a $7 million landscaping business, pulling in $120,000 in profit every single month. Multiple divisions, massive contracts, complex operations, and he does it all in less than 40 hours a week. In this episode, I'm talking to Riley Rivers to find out how he built his company, including the key decisions he made as he scaled. If you're ready to step out of the day-to-day and become a real CEO, Riley's story is a must listen. Riley, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Stoked to talk to you today. You've been with BTA for about a year and a half. You work with Coach Craig. During that time, you've almost or more than doubled the business. You're on track to double it this year while stepping back. So curious to know how the hell you even did that, but sound like a good chat for today?
Yeah, absolutely. We kind of just figured it out. So.
let's figure out how you figured it out. I guess like when you look at the last year and a half, like what's been going on? What are some of the core principles? What's happened for you to be able to have this happen? Let's just start kind of high level.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just getting rid of the bottlenecks. So like identifying what the bottlenecks are. Turns out a lot of the bottlenecks were me, and we call those Rileyisms. And so a little bit of the theme the past 2 years is eliminating the Rileyisms. But things that I used to hold on to or ways that I used to do certain things that worked when we were a much smaller company, they don't work now. They don't work at the size that we are. So honestly, just being able to step back and then let our people do their jobs. And it's resulted in me being able to work way more on business development and things that I should be looking at as a business owner. And then allowing our team to just have a whole lot more intrinsic value each day in and day out, feeling more fulfilled in their roles because they're seeing the success of their individual hard work. And I think it's really important, especially as we've built up the management team, we've taken people out of the field and put them into management. When they were in the field, they were used to completing a project, seeing the sod go down, the homeowner happy. They get the intrinsic value that way. They've had to learn how to have new intrinsic value for themselves, not physically completing the project anymore. And so that was one of the best things we've done on the leadership team is really just allowing our people to work at what they're good at. And so that's worked out really well.
And you hit it like 3 million, I always think is like a pretty critical transition point because from there forward, it is no longer about you. And a lot of people do mess this part up. Leading up to that, like what was your journey? How long you've been in business? How did you get to even 3 million along the way? What was kind of the trend then? And what was the big shift right around that time?
Yeah, really. We started in 2018. It was on a 1960s horse trailer that my grandfather gave me and called up my best friend, Aiden. And I said, I don't really know. I think I know what I'm doing a little bit, but I don't know if we're going to make a bunch of money, but I'll make sure we at least make rent. And somehow that was a good enough sales pitch for him to join me. And we've really just started rocking and rolling. We had one crew and then the next year we had 2 to 3 crews and kept just continually adding a crew or two now or three every single year that we've been in business. My area in Bozeman, Montana, basically just watched the show Yellowstone. It's 100% accurate. And especially if you tell the locals that you watched Yellowstone, they love it. not really, but it's been a boomtown. It's been a boomtown kind of post the Great Recession and even more so after COVID. And so we started in 2018, had a couple of years under our belt. We were already really busy doing a lot of spec homes, landscaping for spec homes. I had worked at another contractor prior and he was going a different direction. I chose not to buy his business and start mine and was really through the subcontractors that he used, as well as the local suppliers, they all knew me from my last company that I worked at and instantly gave me credit. They weren't worried about me. We'd worked on a relationship. One of the irrigation subs that we had used all the time, Scott, he instantly fed me like 30 houses to landscape, which was about all we could handle that year anyway. So really we were blessed with having all the work in front of us, and we really just needed to figure out how to do the operational side of the business. We didn't actually have to work a ton on selling. I suppose we did, learning how to bid and learning how to conduct a business, but the work had been so far in front of us, it wasn't too difficult. We really got to focus on just building the operation, and led us up into 2020. And that, you didn't, nobody in that, you know, winter really knew what was going to happen, but everybody moved into communities like Bozeman and around. And you know, we watched single family homes go from about 400,000 a piece to nearly 900,000 a piece in just a couple of years. And so there was a huge demand for new homes, huge population increase in a very short amount of time. And up until honestly this year, it's been just rocking and rolling on a lot of spec homes. And then the last couple of years was kind of the commercial swing, where we saw a lot of apartment projects coming online. We landscaped quite a few apartments, a lot of commercial infrastructure that went in the ground after all these people came to Bozeman. So yeah, we really just kept focusing more so on the production side of things, because the sales was more or less handling itself just from word of mouth in a, what for Montana is a large city, but still is a very small town mentality, building off our reputation since then.
If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, but have never actually reached out, I encourage you to make today that day. See, taking your business to the next level takes a whole lot more than just listening to a podcast. It takes coaching on your goals. It takes proper implementation of those ideas, and it takes a like-minded peer group who's been where you're about to go. So stop playing around with your business and let's take this thing seriously. Book a call below and let's start the conversation. Yeah, so you had quite a bit of work coming in for you. How did you like evolve along the way? Like, was it slow and gradual? Was it sudden? Going from one to three, what were the stages for you and what were your roles along the way?
Yeah, it was gradual in the fact that, you know, by that spring, we kind of knew what we were going to be doing that year for the most part. It was a little bit of a show during those summers trying to figure out how to handle it. All right, last year we had $1 million on the books. This year we've got 1.8. We're going to shoot for 2, kind of. We did not do budgeting back then. And really just had to put all the pieces together. My role evolved from, you know, we took on irrigation in-house, and so I was doing all the irrigation systems. By about 2020, I got out of that, and so I was flagging out the irrigation system, so I was still selling the jobs and operating. Then we had to bring on an office manager, Paige, who's still with us today, and I watched all the roles she took away from me during that time, making sure that we're paying our bills on time and not overpaying, managing HR and payroll. So we call it like taking off hats continually every year. That's something we strive for, is everybody in the management team in some fashion or another to be taking off hats. And up until, you know, the last 2 years, really my hats keep getting removed. I don't know if there's any more to really remove at this point. Go from being in the field to being partially in the field to then in the office and making sure that we're doing all the project management and the sales and all that, to now where we have project management and we have sales and we have the office handled. There's bills and invoices that come in that I had absolutely nothing to do with the job, from the initial lead all the way to close out to collecting the check. I just see an address, and that's been a huge point of pride. Like, our team just handling it. We've all continually just figured out how to take off those hats. And now it's really just getting rid of the Rileyism and picking up the pieces from the things that I would cover that nobody really knew I was, and or the people doing taking the Rileyisms out and doing them much better than I ever did them.
Everyone has Rileyisms. I don't call them Dannyisms, but I just call them me getting in the way. But
yeah.
Yeah. So your role is naturally evolving along the way. You hit 3 million. At what point is around then, like, what point do you start actually like looking forward and being like, okay, we're going from 3 to 5, 3 to 7. What are the things you need to have in place when you start to think through this next stage of business?
Yeah, I think that's actually why that's why I joined BTAs is, you know, we had the production side of things figured out, a great team there. I needed to learn how to fill my time up. It's something, if you ask Coach Craig, I've asked him a few times, like, I don't, you know, it's the Ricky Bobby. I don't know what to do with my hands. Like, try to figure that out. So naturally it was, how else am I going to fill my time? I'm going to start thinking about what the future holds. And that's been awesome to sit there and not just daydream, but put pen to paper, build out budgets for what it looks like when we're a $7 million company and what it looks like for when we're an $11 and $15 million company. Since then, you know, kind of built like the budgets for what we're looking at over the next couple of years and then backfilled from there. What does our org chart look like? That was one of the things I really wanted to work on with BTA and have is, all right, at 7 million, we have this many people, we have these positions. So at 15 million, doesn't just mean that those positions double, what positions are needed while we're there, backfill that, get the org chart kind of buttoned up and what we think is going to be the best solution. And then start looking at, all right, do we have the right facility to be able to handle that? And so during a very successful year last year, you know, we've built our facility here where we know that we could sustain about 20 million is where we can grow to in our current facility, the way that it's set up. So my role was, you know, day to day, not necessarily thinking about way down the road, to now it's what's in front of me currently. A team's got, you know, pretty much the year in front of them handled for the most part. How am I going to fill my time? So what does my time need to be used by? And I've really just done it that way.
So I wrote down two things. I wrote down one is just like internal Rileyism. So it's like my own stuff. And then there's like the strategy. There's a kind of like two things. And then maybe we can get into each one of them a little bit. But can we start with you? Like what are Rileyisms? Why are they in the way all the time? What, like, how did you learn to let go of that? Like, what was the hardest part for you when it came to growth, when it came to trying to figure out how to let go and how to get out of the way, basically?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, when you're in the field, when you bid the job, like when we all started our companies and you bid the job and then you're physically the one on the job site doing it, you know, oh, I did have this covered. I was thinking about getting my materials from this vendor. I was going to do it at this time. And so you kind of have that all, you have the whole game plan in your head and you really don't need to like get it out to your team until like the day of when you're calling the plays on how to get the job done. So learning the gaps of it's, I can't just send my team an estimate that I did and we won and say, all right, go figure it out. With the team that I do have, they're probably going to get 80% of it. But the Rileyisms were, okay, well, you only bid 20 tons of boulders. It actually needs 30 tons. Is this a change order or how do we manage that kind of business relationship? Where are the boulders coming from? You didn't actually spec what boulders you bid. Do we just use random ones? So taking all the thinking out of your head and having it put on paper, and then, you know, very simply, we had to institute our sales to production handoff, which has been amplified now that we have a salesperson, Travis, and allowing that sales to production handoff to be much more seamless, where the production team is getting everything that they needed. So most of the Rileyisms that came up where I was in the way, we didn't actually know that they were in the way until I just was removed from it. And it's, what kind of boulders are we using? And that's sort of a thing.
So what you're talking about is really important because, and I've even seen this in our own business, but it's like you as the owner are assuming a role. That role is likely the least systemized role in the entire company because it's your whatever. You call it Rileyisms. I call it like entrepreneur ADD way of doing things. And so it just kind of makes sense to you. You're kind of like, this is how you do it. You just kind of do it. Here you go. It's good. So how do you identify those ahead of time? And how do you make sure that you're actually documenting them in the right way? And because I could see a lot of people, and I've done this mistake too, where I'm just kind of like, here's the role, take it. Disaster happens. And then we have to constantly be fixing. How do you get ahead of that?
So we had very guilty of like when we create new roles and we take off hats, we didn't necessarily build what that new role was going to look like first. We just knew we needed somebody there to help us out. And then they were there and we're trying to backfill and figure out what they're supposed to do. So it was kind of do it and then we're going to figure out where the gaps are. Now we're getting smarter. And really what we do this every single year. We'll take a set of plans from a commercial project or a residential project, kind of our two construction service offerings, and run it through from lead all the way through collecting the final check and handing over the handoff packet to the homeowner or client. And we have whoever's on the management team and the production team in the room. Takes a couple hours. We just go through it step by step. Who's doing this and who's owning what? And now we're assigning ownership to it so that there's not any balls getting dropped, because it used to just be me being the main point of contact for a homeowner or a client. And now there's a project manager involved, an assistant project manager involved. We have our office manager. At some point, they might get turned over to maintenance. So there's a maintenance side of things. We've added this bureaucracy, and it only works if you've assigned that ownership. So now when we're taking off hats, we're always making sure that we assign that ownership and have a much better plan going forward. I think the other thing that we do is very seldom am I making a decision on my own. We've made a very good, built a very good leadership team. We have our leadership team meetings every Thursday. And recently we had to make some big changes in the company. And I came in with somewhat my thought on how we were going to do it. And we left with a much more complete plan of than what I was thinking. They were thinking about things that I wasn't. So I really just lean on the team for like how we're going to that next step or that next role or how we're going to get through a situation.
When you say assign ownership, what does that mean? Is it, here's your job, take it. Like, what are you actually doing when you're assigning ownership to somebody so that they understand their role?
Yeah, for example, in the sales reduction handoff, the communication from when the contract is signed through the final check, at that point, it's takes it away from sales, and all the communication is owned by the project manager. Say it's a homeowner. So the owning the schedule, owning the communication to it, owning getting the materials there, and owning the completion of the project. The salesman is not brought back in until the end of the project to make sure that everything was completed the way that it needed to be. That way, the homeowner, the client, isn't trying to figure out which manager with which title they need to talk to. And then our guys know that, well, Travis isn't handling that. I'm the project manager. I need to handle this. Travis is handling his things. I'm not responsible for X, Y, and Z. And it helps prevent a lot of overlap to where we don't have multiple people responding or no one responding because nobody knew that they owned it.
For yourself, like, what have you learned? Like, what is your strengths? What did you have to let go of? What is your team taking over from you? What's the right kind of like way to position you as you've been doing a lot of this work?
Yeah, I mean, I think really the biggest thing that I've learned is our people are a lot more capable than maybe you initially see. And then especially there's people out there that are on your team probably currently right now that you might not realize the skill set that they have if you don't ask them or challenge them. And so I really learned that I don't make a very good employee.
Me either.
What I tolerate for myself. Yeah. And I imagine most of the people that listen to this, they probably aren't very good employees. It's probably why we started the business. The level of production when it comes to employee level tasks, for me, it's now like creating an estimate. I can create an estimate very quickly, but it's not as complete as my estimator, Travis. Mm-hmm. And if he missed some of the things that I would be missing, we would be having very different GSRs every single week. And so what I really just learned is that whenever we remove these hats, we let, you know, I take off a position that I had and let someone else handle it. It's kind of sink or swim. They want to do a good job naturally if you have the right people. And so by letting your people do their job, they're going to do that job way more completely than you would. It doesn't always necessarily mean faster, but it's going to be at a much higher level than likely you did. Travis estimates much more completely and accurately than I used to. I know the production team likes his sales handoffs much more than they like mine. And so really it's just by siloing yourself a little bit more, letting your team be a little more siloed in what they're doing, they complete that at a much better level.
How do you know you have the right people? Like, how do you know you're actually just like, hey, this guy can actually take this on, especially when it's something they've never done before?
Yeah, a lot of times, I mean, it just comes to figuring it out. You kind of have to take that leap and trust them. I'm much better about reading people now and recognizing their strengths than I used to be. And really, I think you're never going to know unless you try. And so you might think, well, I know, for example, my operations manager, Aiden, who's been with me since day one, He's a very good operations manager. He's thinking, he's very good about playing chess on a chessboard when it comes to the scheduling and how we're going to complete jobs, run six construction crews. He does that at a very good level. He would not make a very good salesman, and he'll be the first to tell you that. Mm-hmm. That's not his MO. He likes talking to people, but he's much better at operating the operations of the business. And so, you know, he's been with me since day one. Maybe I did want to try him at one point into being a salesman, but then you kind of have to realize, like, all right, that is not what you're good at. You're much better at that, at the operational side of things and that. And so you really just got to kind of pick up on, you know, little idiosyncrasies that they have, figure out, you can tell when someone likes their job, they're really excited about when they win. And so picking out when they complete a task, how they handle that, how they might want to think about handling it differently in the future, that's a really good sign of you've got the right person in the right spot.
And I'm just referencing what you said earlier too, around building a budget and org structure, all these things. So you're defining the company's org structure, how far in advance, a year, 2 years?
Well, right now we've got one built out for $15 million at 3 years.
Okay. So you've got, you've got a 3 year vision out, you've got roles on the nodes on this org structure, and then you're filling it with your current people as well as probably some new hires. Are you like, how are you able to say, okay, this node matches this person, or are you custom creating roles for your people as they're just evolving over time?
We've done both. And now I think we're too big to assign names to that org chart necessarily. Mm-hmm. We have to create the position better. We've done that in the past where we've put people in a position that they were not good at. And being able to pivot from that is pretty important, so you don't burn, you know, you might have a really good crew member who has been with us forever and he completes such great work, but I know he does not want to be a crew leader. We've asked him multiple times and now we're done asking him because he's just really good at what he does. He knows that he's about capped out on, he is capped out on his wage without moving up, but that's fine. He wants to stay to being a crew member. We're going to take that production and that attitude and that craftsmanship that he brings every day, and we'll let him stay as a crew leader or crew member as long as he wants. And then, you know, and at other times we've taken people from a crew member to a crew leader who expressed interest in being a crew leader. They showed some signs of becoming a good crew leader, and unfortunately we've had to demote them because it didn't match even with the training that we wanted to give them.
Can you tell me where you messed that up the most? You don't have to say names. I'm just curious. What is like the biggest version of that where you're like, we really got this wrong?
I don't think we've gotten it. You know, I can really only think of one time where we promoted a crew member to a crew leader who was not ready for it yet. Fortunately, another time we did promote a crew leader up to a crew member. This was relatively recent and they did not take the demotion very well. We kind of anticipated that. And we took a good crew member who was going to remain a good crew member. We promoted him to a crew leader, thought everything was going to work out. We gave the coaching that we needed to give. We felt we tried our best, but they couldn't handle the stress. They couldn't handle the pressure. And so they ended up leaving the company. And so, yeah, you're never always going to get it 100% right. You're going to stumble as you go. But, you know, if you can fail forward, you know, we learn from that. Now we've got metrics in place where we can know, we don't just promote somebody. We open up interviews across the company if there's a promotion available, and we interview that person. Even though they've worked for us for years, we're still going to put them through our same two interview process to make sure that they can handle that job, because now we've got our employee agreements in place and job descriptions well-defined. So that really comes back to not putting names on an org chart and more so creating the position. And then you might have people in the roster that want to move laterally or move up into those positions.
That's really smart. So basically what you're saying is we create a budget for the future. We know kind of what the cost structure is going to look like. We then create the org structure for what that looks like. All nodes are sitting there. Now we have to go and fill that with human beings, not put human beings on the org structure and try and make a custom role. Within that, you just talked about interviewing your own team. How do you do that objectively? How do you make sure that actually gets done in a way where you're not like just, because I've seen this, I have this going on my team right now, actually, where I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm not interviewing you because I already know you. So how do you objectively look at someone on your team and say, hey, we're going to properly do an interview process and make the right call out of it?
That one's tough because that's where we've screwed that up too. But very recently, I mean, I can name these names. Our office manager, her husband Zach, wanted to join the company. I've known Zach. I was at their wedding. I've known him very well for several years. I was really excited that he wanted to come to the company. Well, his wife was not going to interview him. I was not going to interview him. Several people on the management team knew him pretty well. So we kind of had to reach for, all right, who is going to interview him? And fortunately, you know, David didn't know him that well. And so David interviewed him. And then the second interview was, you know, taken place by somebody else on the management team who didn't know Zach that well. And one way that we do that, and we do this for every, you know, we do two interviews for every position. And whoever conducts the first interview does not conduct the second interview, and they do not compare notes until both interviews are done. The first person conducting the first interview has the opportunity to say, like, hey, we're not going to move you forward. But if they do, they just say, all right, Everett, you're going to go interview Zach now. That's it. They don't get to pass anything else, so that they get a lot less. We don't want the first interview to influence the second one. And so that's something we rolled out this year that really worked out. And now I can say, because I'm sure Zach and Paige will listen to this, Zach's been a phenomenal addition to the team. He runs one of the maintenance crews, and I'm sure he's got a good career ahead of him at this company. And it was great to be able to do that and not let friendship get in the way, for better or for worse.
Yeah, that was my next question, actually, is just on like the emotional side of this. So when people want a raise or they want a promotion or they're looking forward to something, they're internally in your company and you don't promote them, how do you handle that? How do you mitigate, you know, the risk of them maybe leaving over the fact that they didn't actually get the role?
Yeah, you know, we've always thought like if they left because they didn't get the role, we had this happen this fall, and it resulted very good for both parties. But they didn't leave because they believe in the company, and we did find a different role that would work out better for this individual. And you know, it's really just managing. We have such a strong culture at this company, and I'm confident if you talk to anybody here, they would echo that statement. It's not just me. They know that we've got their back, and we're doing things and making decisions for a reason. And we all do everything that we can to take emotion out of it. And that was one of the ways that we revamped our hiring process this year, because we got flooded with applicants. We revamped the hiring process to take that emotion out, where they've got to fill out a scorecard. They don't get interviewed by somebody that they know. And then it came in handy where we understood, like, hey, this guy scored great on all these items, but they scored really poorly on their attitude and their culture fit and everything like that. And it was made it very simple. Like, they probably are a great landscaper. We'll go let them be a good landscaper at another company because there's not a culture fit. There's not an attitude fit. And that's really helped simplify a lot of things. I started the company with my best friend. We've been best friends since we were 12 years old. And we lived together for the first 5 years of the company. And he and I always had a rule, like, hey, if we want to talk about work naturally, because we both care, when we go home, we will. But if one of us says we don't want to talk about work, then we're just not going to talk about work. And he and I, we've gotten into some, I would like to say, screaming matches. We've gotten some heated debates at work, and then pretty easy just to, all right, well, work's done, let's go grab a beer. And so I was always warned not to hire your friends. I have friends who I would never entertain hiring. But some of our best employees have come from friendship, and we've all been able to maintain a very good work is work, and we all know that we care about it. And then our friendship is separate.
Knowing that that is a principle in business, right? Don't hire your friends. We've all heard that. Why does it feel different for you?
I think it comes back to our culture. Mm-hmm. It really does. And I think, I don't know, I don't like being told what to do. I've learned that. I could never have been in the military. So I like to challenge statements like that. Don't hire your friends. And it's like, why? Well, you don't want to hire your friends because you're going to argue, you're going to do that. I'm like, okay, I could see that being a case. Well, how do we get past that? Because you're going to make a great operations manager, I can tell. So I really want you on my team, and I want you to be part of this company and help me build this thing. How are we going to handle conflict when that arises? And we've really just learned how to manage within that. And it's work is work. We know that if we're screaming at each other about something, it's because we care about the company and we care about our jobs. But it doesn't mean that we can't go grab a beer after work or lunch or go out on the boat. And so I've always, yeah, I just kind of like to be a rebel in some ways. I didn't want to subscribe to that notion that you can't hire friends. There's friends I won't hire and friends who, you know, Aiden's a perfect example. Paige is a great example. This company would not be what it is today without those individuals.
Yeah, it sounds like you've built like a team of like you said, committed people. It's like they're not in it for the money. This isn't a transactional relationship where they trade their time for money with you. They're in the journey with you. They're building something with you. And yeah, you keep referencing culture. Maybe you want to speak to that a little bit, but like, what do you think is so unique about your culture? Why is it working the way it's working? When you look at other companies, you don't always see that, right? So where's the gap and what do you think is going on over there that's not going on in other areas?
Yeah, I think it just comes back to caring and, you know, really giving a shit about the people that you work with in and out. I mean, everyone knows that you spend more time at work than you do at home. And so we want to enjoy the people that we're around. We hire on culture first. If there's not a culture fit, we don't allow that. And the team came up with the core values about 5 years ago: safety, family, pride, own it, and growth. And family is the number one thing that everyone gets nominated for in our group chat. And it could be, you know, they stayed late to help me out on the job, or we had a great time this weekend, I'm going to nominate, we were out fishing, we had a great time, I'm going to nominate Kurt for family. That happens in this company quite a bit. And so we constantly are talking about our culture. We're constantly enjoying being around each other. We have company events where we all just hang out, or naturally, I know naturally the guys, a lot of them are all go hang out after work. For us right now, like the workday is wrapping up. I know there's at least 15 people in the shop right now, kind of just decompressing from the day, maybe having a cold drink, hanging out in the shop. And they'll probably be there for the next hour. And they do that before they go home because they want to, they're friends with everybody that they work with. And I think a lot of it probably, you know, may have came from how they see Aiden and I interact with each other and know that we've been best friends for going on 20 years now, that it's possible to have a great friendship at work and still both respectively get our jobs done and respect each other. And it makes it really nice to be able to work at a company where you've really got family. A lot of people talk about family, but most of our employees are going to agree with you. We've got a pretty, pretty cool family at River Zanesky.
For somebody who's listening right now, they're like, good for you, Riley. Wish I had that culture. Like, what what advice would you give someone who's like, hey, look, like, I get it, but like, our culture is struggling actually quite a bit, and I don't have that relationship with my team like you do. Any like just thoughts on or advice you'd give for someone like that?
I think a lot of it comes down to trying to understand why, like get to the bottom of why. And you as the owner, you can definitely recognize maybe you don't have a good culture, but you're probably not going to be able to figure out why. And your why the culture is not good might be much different than your field staff or your management staff, everyone together. Simply just having some humility and asking, you know, hey, what can we do to, you can't force culture, you can't force friendship, don't try it, but asking them about their life. Every GSR we conduct, we start out with, like, we all kind of want to get right into the, you know, the meat and potatoes of the metrics in the GSR. We take 5 minutes to talk about what's going on in our personal life. Whether it's cool, you know, they just bought a new drift boat and they've been fishing a lot, or they got engaged, whatever the case may be. Always starting out all of our meetings with wins, personal and business, really just caring a lot about the people around you. And if you don't have a good culture, it doesn't mean you don't care about your people. I'm sure that you do. It really just comes back to, you know, try to get to why isn't the culture the greatest, and listen to your team. One thing we always do that I believe helps our culture quite a bit, in every interview, we always talk about how we care about what our staff thinks, whether they're a manager, dump truck driver, crew member, whatever it is, we want input and feedback. And so every year we have a debrief from the year where all the crew members and crew leaders, the field level staff, gets locked in a room, and they get as much time as they would like to talk about what was good and what was bad. And I'm never at that meeting because I'm not going to try to influence or be intimidating of what they might say. I just want the full understanding of how things could be done better. You guys are the ones in the field day in and day out producing revenue for the company. I want to hear your ideas. And so being really open-minded to just listening to them. Not every idea they come up with, it gets implemented. Not every idea they come up with is feasible, but really just listening to your people and just taking a minute, like maybe it's just not about work, but just understand what's going on in their own life. It goes a long ways.
Yeah, I think too, just listening to you, it's a bit organic. It sounds like how it's happened, but you've created a culture because everyone there shares the same values. And so it's like an organism that'll spit out the foreign object real fast, because if it's not a part of the culture, it's not going to last long. Versus if you are the only thing that's holding culture, if you're an owner sitting there being like, I'm the only thing holding culture together, then chances are it's like you're fighting a losing battle. Like you're the foreign object actually, because there's not a whole team around you, riled around you.
Yeah.
And it's not an overnight thing. You can't just put some core values on the wall and say, okay, we're going to have culture now. It's like it's years and years of building towards it.
That was the thing. I was not in the room when the core values were created. I heard about them from some podcasts and some other things that needed to be done. And in my head, I had a different set of core values. I think we took an afternoon of most of the company in the winter and I wasn't there. We just had said, this was all the way back in 2020. Hey, all these people are telling me we need core values. I don't want to just do it to check a box. Let's come up with some core values that we can live by. And what's really cool about that is the team really does live by it. I mentioned briefly, but we have a nominations chat in our Slack channel. And people can get nominated for living up to one of the five core values. And it'll say, you know, I'm going to nominate Kaiser for growth because he's able to operate a mower much more efficiently than he could a month ago. Then the next morning they get a chip, Rivers chip, and they can cash those tokens in for some different swag, you know, boots or headphones, all the way up to, if they get 20, they can cash in for a day of PTO. I had nothing to do with that. I did not come up with it. Basically, Aiden just said, hey, I think this is a good idea. Put money in the budget and we're going to start doing this. Like the next day, these chips show up and we started doing it. We've done that consistently now for, I think, 4 years. And that's what really helps the core values not just be some words up on the wall, is everyone in that chat, I can see it's going off right now because it's the end of the day. They're all nominating each other for little things. Sometimes it's just doing their job. Sometimes it's helping each other out on something. And that's one of the best things we've done to really just make sure that the core values mean something. And it's definitely helped our culture.
Yeah. It's a part of, the daily activities. It's a part of like the actual like operational day. Your leadership team, like we were doing prep, this was the biggest thing that impressed me actually about your whole team, is like, they are really like, they're building out the SOPs. They're building out the processes. They came up with your core values. That's pretty rare. Why do you think that is? And are most of them homegrown? Like they grew up with you, they built the business with you over time. Why and how did you build a team like that?
Yeah, I think most of the people that work at this company, I was thinking about this today, maybe two or three of us out of a team of 40 have come to the company with landscaping or business experience. And I think I'm one of those three people that had some experience. So we've really cultivated everyone that's on our leadership team, had been with the company for several years and worked their way up, with the exception of Travis. Travis came on, he was our first kind of outside hire into the leadership team, but he fit right in. And that has had its own, you know, pros and cons. The pros are that they know the business, they know what we do. There wasn't any trying to learn the company. The cons were maybe they didn't bring some of that experience that we probably needed, some of that outside coaching that we could have gotten from somebody with more experience from another company. But it's also been such a huge, it's been a great thing for the whole company to see that, you know, you can, Dalton's one of our project managers right now, and he's doing a fantastic job. He started out in 2021 as a crew member, and now he's worked his way up to being a project manager. Same thing with Gavin, same thing with Everett. They've all done a great job of just moving through the company, and everyone sees that inside the company, and they say, that's what I want. I want to be able to move up. And so we might have been able to get some more experience, or maybe not have to learn some lessons had we brought in more experienced people. But it's also been one of the bigger, stronger things for our culture and our team to know that we've got it. On the SOP side of things, a lot of times that comes from our debrief meetings, knowing that if we did something wrong twice, then we definitely need an SOP. I'm sure I heard that somewhere in a podcast. I'm not that smart, but if it needs to be done twice, we need an SOP. And so usually it'll be a project manager, maybe a crew leader that'll have a frustration over having to do some kind of rework. And it's like, all right, slow down. We need an SOP going forward. And we were very intentional about not letting our SOPs just live in a Google Drive document. And we didn't get a whole lot of snow this winter. So Everett specifically spent a ton of time filming all of our SOPs and making videos to where you can go on our team can go on our private YouTube channel and find every SOP in Spanish or English in an actual video format.
I'm curious, like, so SOPs is one of them. You said the word GSR, which I know what that means because we work on it all the time, but what are some of the actual structural things as well that have been built in the company to allow for leadership to take that level of ownership in the day-to-day?
The GSR is a one-on-one. Like, a lot of that really comes into being, well, for anything, that the GSRs allow me to feel okay.
We should explain what a GSR is. Let's tell everyone what it is, just because everyone else is wondering.
Goal set and review.
Okay.
So having the goal set review meetings where, you know, we're just starting out, it's weekly, every week with my four direct reports, and then they have GSRs with their direct reports. For me, stepping out of where I've stepped out of, I'm not involved in maintenance. I'm not involved in construction. I'm not involved in operations or sales, really, for either of them, except for in some advice capacity. Those meetings allow me really to just get a pulse, know that they're completing their job, give them a little bit of coaching on, you know, hey, here's this particular situation that here's how I would handle that going on. And then, you know, being able to use the metrics we do record to, show them how to win. You know, you have to know the score to play the game. And so that's worked really well. It's also been really beneficial for them to know that they are succeeding at their job, kind of talking about finding that intrinsic value. They don't, you know, we'll be on projects for months at a time. And so you don't always get that good feeling of completion right away, that satisfaction. But knowing that, you know, hey, we are hitting our gross profit percentage. We don't have these callbacks that we used to have. I do have all my submittals in on time. You know, everything that goes into their particular job, letting them win basically every week. And then where they're not winning, we get to do some coaching on what it takes to get them through that process. For them, I think it really helps them know that they're not alone in what they're going through too.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a way to support them. It's a way to hold them accountable. It's a way to celebrate wins together. And it's a way to provide direction on, like, this is what we're trying to hit, achieve numerically. This is what we're trying to achieve in your role. And now I'm going to be with you all the way through it. It's interesting. So the business has evolved over the last couple of years. What is your role now? What do you spend your time doing? What's important for you? What's the important work that you're working on? And how's that shifted over the last couple of years?
Yeah. You know, now it's shifted to where... my favorite thing about this year is I'm not involved in the schedule anymore either. That was one of those things that I still allowed myself. They didn't need me, but I don't know why.
Scheduling's easy. What are you talking about?
Yeah. I allowed myself to be involved in the scheduling, and, I don't even get to make comments on it anymore. They won't let me. So, that, you know, I'm sorry, my role now today really is, a lot more business development, especially as of late. The market's shifted quite a bit here, and we've had to revalue where we're going for this season specifically right in front of us. We've got a sales gap we need to fill, and I know that it's not my sole job alone to fill it. I've got some support in specific positions like Travis's in sales to help me fill that. I realize how much better I am at business development and calling people, making sure that they're happy with the work that our team's providing, being able to call multiple six-figure project owners and just check in. And we haven't had a talk in months, and I'm just checking in, you know, hey, how'd your project manager do for you on that job? And fortunately, you know, I'm usually getting good feedback, and simply by me checking in, you know, now they're going to think about us for the next job. And then I've been able to look to next year. Our backlog for next year is already looking fantastic, more so than this year even. And so allowing me to just be able to move ahead and think about really not what we have to do this year, but what we're going to look like next year. Can this property we're at sustain us? Do I need to get some better interest rates on trucks? It kind of just varies every day. Some days I'm busy and I may be productive. Other days I'm not. And I can spend a lot of time. I go to job sites every Monday. I realize Mondays are not a productive day for me at my desk.
Mm-hmm.
And so every Monday at 11 o'clock, I start heading out to job sites, try to bring out, you know, Gatorade and ice cream to the crews if it's hot out. And if I see an issue on a job site, I might do a little bit of coaching with the crew leader. Most of the time it's going to go to the project manager and I'm going to tell him like, hey, what I saw, I heard my ideas. And allows me to just, you know, feel good and get grounded again, check in on the job sites. So really it's just a lot of managing people who are managing people now. And then I get to go out and not necessarily sell projects, but I'm selling people on Rivers Landscaping. And it's a really exciting thing to do, making sure that we're kind of at the forefront of everybody's minds in our area for commercial and residential landscape construction and maintenance.
Yeah, so it sounds like a couple of things. It sounds like you're doing a bit of floating, which is maybe sounds bad, but it's like you're getting the heartbeat of the organization and you're maintaining it. And you're able to do these custom little things that makes you still a great, awesome small business and not a big corporate shop. You're spending time leading your leadership team so they can be executing and be on task and be focused on the things that matter. You're spending a little bit of time in the future, which I want to ask you about in a second, but you're looking at towards where things are going. And then you're ripping sales. You're ripping sales in relationships to make sure that you're keeping the wheel spinning, which is really smart. So in that breakup of things, the one thing I wanted to get a bit more into was the future side of it. How much time do you spend on the future? What does that actually look like? What does that mean for somebody's like, you know, I could just daydream all day. Like, how does that become real? How do you make sure that your random ideas actually make their way past just like, you know, a conversation on a Tuesday and actually become a part of the organization 2 years later?
Yeah. You know, I struggle with that a little bit because, you know, a lot of it has to do with thinking about what, you know, have a vision for where we want to go and what I'd like to see this company look like and what the opportunities we could provide for our team are when we get to these sizes. What I've found to be the most effective for me is to, you know, we've already got a budget rolling for next year and a couple years beyond that. And I don't let myself get too hung up in the weeds of like, you know, is it possible to go and get these millions of dollars of revenue? What I start doing then is, you know, create the big picture out there and then just start working it backwards of how can I, all right, we need to go and get $5 million in maintenance in a couple of years. So how do we continue today to start making sure that we're ready for that and that our brand can be in a strong enough position that people are always going to think about us for commercial maintenance, and really just working it backwards and knowing kind of step by step what it would take to get there, who it would take to hire, what do all our, you know, our equipment and facilities need to look like. So I'd say I probably spend maybe 15 hours a week on work like that. Beyond that, you know, just kind of checking in with clients and yeah, really just, I can be, you know, when I'm able to be a floater, right now I was doing an estimate today. I don't always do the estimating anymore, but Travis has got a pretty big workload in front of him right now, which is great. It means that the leads are working, but I'm just helping him get a couple estimates out the door. And it's great to know that I can jump in and help with that. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to leave the office at a reasonable hour tonight.
How is your, actually speaking of leaving the office, how is your personal life right now? How are you balancing the two? What is that going to look like?
Yeah. I've always been pretty strict about my weekends and having my time. I've got a camper I keep up at a lake nearby and a boat, an old Malibu surf boat. And I go there every single weekend and it doesn't really matter. There's no landscaping emergency. I don't know what anyone thinks. Like it can always wait. And it doesn't have to be handled on the weekend. I get ahead of myself, during the week so that I can enjoy my weekends. And I've got a black lab and partner, and we go to the lake every single weekend, and that's what's fun for me, and that's what cleared my head, and definitely gets me set for the next week. And then, you know, I go home, I golf every Monday with some buddies. I used to be really terrible, and now I'm like not as terrible, and being able to just enjoy that, knowing that I am not going to be that productive at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday night. I'm just not. It's learning myself that I've got other things on my mind, or I just need to take a break. So I'm just not going to fight it anymore. But at the same time, if I need to, I know that if I've got to get a project out the door or help the team with something, I can stay here until 10 o'clock if I had to get it done. So I haven't lost that get it done mentality, but I've learned myself, I'm way more clear-headed and productive if I'm, good at my own personal life. And so I've been very protective of my personal time. I only have one cell phone, but most people don't call me anymore anyway, which is convenient. But I don't respond to work stuff on the weekend. I don't even check my email once I leave the office. The problem is going to be there the next day, or the solution is going to be there the next day. You handling it right now is not going to move the needle. And there is never a landscaping emergency. I don't care what anyone says. It's just trees.
There's a lot of people listening right now that need to hear this message. Yeah. Is there anything you would say to them too? Because I know a lot of our members, even, it's just like they come in hot. They come in going fast, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 hour work weeks. I see a lot of these guys do, and they just don't know any different. Any thoughts or advice just for those who are in that spot right now?
Yeah, a challenge, like, is that actually 80 hours that's actually productive? Mm. I mean, probably not. Maybe 30 hours of it. Again, it goes back to, you're probably a terrible employee and you need to fire yourself. Like, I had to fire myself. You know, you didn't start a business, and you know this, but like, you didn't start a business to work 80 hour weeks. Yes, you have to in the beginning. And there's still times. I'm not like some genius. There's still times where I'm going to pull a late night, or I'm going to have a couple weeks where I'm putting in the hours, and that's fine. But, you know, there's only so much to life. And now that I'm in much more, especially the last 3 years, have been in much better control of my own personal life. The hours that I am working, I'm still working 40 hours a week, sometimes 50. They are far more productive than back when I allegedly was working 80 hours. It was not a productive 80 hours. And it's allowed me to do things like think about the future rather than just be so headstrong on what's right in front of me. My team is working on what's right in front of them, and they're doing it at a higher level than I was. And so if I wasn't, you know, in control of my personal life or making sure that I had the weekends to go out on the lake, the company would look a whole lot different. I'd be a lot more stressed out. And then, you know, you make worse decisions when you're doing that. So I think most people probably just need to fire themselves. If you're a business owner, stop doing the employee level work and get someone to do that work. They're going to do it better than you, and your team's going to be much better off for it.
Yeah. How many people are in your team right now?
Currently we're at 38 team members.
38. I can't do the math on this, but I always think about this as like, take the number of people, even listening, even like take the number of people you lead right now, times that by say 40 hours a week, 35 hours a week, whatever you want to put the number at, and then times that by 52 weeks a year, or 48 if you want to include vacation time and things like that. Suddenly you're going to realize it's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of hours that you lead in your organization. What the hell are you doing with your 2,000, 3,000 hours a year trying to do those 200,000 hours? You can't.
Yeah.
You can only influence exactly. them. And it's a shift in a mindset. And I think it is a bit of it's a scary thing too, because you got to release control a little bit and let go. And that doesn't always come with success day one, right? So.
Oh, no.
I'm just curious, because we're getting to the end, but like, what is the biggest thing you've ever let go of that actually did not go well? And what did you learn from that?
Yeah, I mean, it was this year. Like, I now, like, when we talk about, I am not a project manager. So not being a project manager, I'm not responsible for billing. I'm not responsible for the financial outcome of the project anymore. We learned our lessons there. I mean, most people know a little bit about commercial contracting. You've got pay ops and you got to get them in on time. If you don't get them in on time, you're not getting paid for the next 30 or 60 plus days. And thought I had it pretty clear that PMs were responsible for the pay ops, and thought we had some controls in place to check that. And yeah, we missed a six-figure pay app on time, and that put it in the spring, and that put us in a cash flow crunch that was really difficult. And as a result, rather than just getting mad, rather than just freaking out, I was not happy, but the PM who messed up was not happy about it either. And we put controls into place to make sure that that doesn't happen. And that's one of the things I do check, is just making sure that the bills that needed to go out went out. It's the end of the month, so there's another billing cycle we'll be checking tomorrow. But, you know, the money being one of the most important, having to manage, you know, the cash flow of the company being one of the most important things that we do, it got screwed up because I took myself out of it. There was some Rileyisms still in the money side of it. And by taking myself out of that, you know, it's become even stronger now that we're not going to screw that up.
So things still happen. You're not invincible, but yeah. It's okay. It's a part of the process. Even if it puts you in that kind of position. Curious, like for those listening, where should they start? And when I say this, I'm talking like there's a lot of people that are listening that are probably 1 to 3, 1 to 4 million. They're on this journey of starting to learn to let go. They're starting to build their team, their middle management teams. Maybe some of them are just thinking about it, and some of them are down that path. But where should they start, just from what you've learned, going from this $3 to $7 million journey that you're on?
Yeah, it's one of the things I tell my managers when they're stressed out about what they do day in and day out, or they feel overwhelmed. It's like, all right, hey, for the next week, do a journal. How did you spend your day, hour by hour? And that's one of the things I did on some advice was like, how was I spending my day hour by hour, and start picking away at like, well, somebody else could handle that. You know, office manager would be much better at handling that than I am. So I'd honestly start, if you're still doing employee level work, basically write down what that looks like and think about who on your current team could handle it. And then start thinking about what that position needs to look like to have somebody else handle that. And so That's one of the best things I did a couple of years ago. And I still do from time to time is, all right, this is going to be the last time that I'm doing an estimate. I'm not going to need to do this again because we're going to get the right people in the right place. And so really just seeing, you know, truthfully, if you're working 80 hours a week in your company, what are you doing with those 80 hours? And what could somebody else do in perhaps less time to get you some of that time back to allow you to actually, you know, run the business and be the leader that your team's counting on.
Yeah. It's final thought on you, for you. It's as far as the future goes, what are you excited about? What are you working on? What are you thinking about? What's the next stage for you?
Yeah. One of the best, for us right now, we've, like I said, in the beginning, we've focused so heavily on dialing in our operations, and it's been so fun to watch our team grow in that way. And the operational side of things is dialed in very well. We're definitely one of the most professional landscaping companies in our area. I had a client tell me that the other day. What the one missing piece I feel like we really have right now, I'm sure I'll find a new one, but is just having a sales and marketing infrastructure. We haven't had to market ourselves very much, and we haven't really had to go and get sales. We do now. And so we get that sales piece in play. I mean, this is going to be an unstoppable team. And so once that part is handled and we have consistent trackable leads, we have, you know, clarity on, we know what's going to be coming through the door and what we can produce in the terms of sales. Production's already figured out. It's going to be something really special. And then as we grow our maintenance division, we're providing such a high level of service on our maintenance side of things right now. We introduced a little bit of a new way of doing it for our area, and watching that division grow, which has been fantastic for cash flow, and David taking that over, have been great. So now it's learning everything we've learned since 2018 at one location here. Definitely have some other locations in mind, and perhaps some other businesses that, you know, can take all these systems and everything that we've learned and implement them somewhere else.
It's good, man. And it's good you mentioned the sales thing, because I'm sure there's a lot of people who are like, good for you. You just like scale because you don't need to go after sales. It's like, well, eventually you do. You grow to the point where you do.
Yeah. So. We definitely do now. We built a monster, and it takes, and you know, I mean, that was one of the things. It's not like we always had everything perfectly figured out. Having a sales infrastructure was not something we had figured out, and we've had to figure it out in short order this year. It wasn't as simple as hiring a sales guy. Go figure. And so what's cool is, like, I've had other people who know the company well but don't work here have agreed, like, we get that piece figured out. It's kind of mind-boggling what we're gonna be able to do, and really look forward to the future, because we're learning our lessons right now. We're taking our shots, but we get the sales part handled in this company. It's gonna be pretty cool.
It's good. And what's really just neat about this whole conversation is everything you've said so far. One, big on culture, actually, but just I'm watching how you're thinking. Like, you're not thinking about what's happening next month, next quarter, just to get that. You're thinking about the future far enough out that you can actually go and build. Like you said, sales is not just as simple as hiring a salesperson. There is a whole process that needs to be built. There's a whole psychology behind it. There's a whole system that needs to be incorporated. And you're giving yourself the time not only to realize that, but then to bring and lead that into your team, and that have them be a part of the entire thing as you guys grow it. So, I think you are naturally a very strong leader, which is really cool to watch. And I don't think you give yourself enough credit. When I was prepping with you, you made it all sound very nonchalant. But I think there's a lot that you've said today that I think a lot of us, even I, got a lot out of. So, Riley, that was awesome. Cool. Maybe one final question for everyone listening. But looking back 5 years ago to now, what would you have told yourself that now you know that you wish you would have said to yourself back then?
For what I'm going through at this very moment, you figure out your sales 5 years ago. It's like the music has stopped, but I think everyone will agree the market's gotten different. It's gotten different in our community. And so it's like the production, it's not like it's figured itself out, but the team that we've got put together there has done tremendous work. And so I wish I would have been more ahead on sales and having that sales team. I'm super proud of my salesman, Travis. He's just absolutely crushing it lately. And he's helped me build that position. I told him when he came on, you're going to have to help me figure this out. And then I think the other thing I'd say is, when the times are good, definitely make sure that you are, you're looking for what the next bit of future looks like with, not with rosy colored glasses, but with some reality and maybe some headwinds that are coming that, just need to look out for.
Yeah, what you're speaking to with the market, actually, this is, we have this bird's eye view at Breather Academy, but it is very real. I think a lot of people grew out of control. Some people were able to handle that growth and ride it, and good job on your end. Some people were not. It was a little too fast, a little too much. And now a lot of us are starting to hit this adjustment point where it's like, hey, like, it's not that we're in a giant recession, there's no work. It's just that it's not coming from nothing. You have to give it intentional effort. And I think the entire industry right now is kind of seeing and learning that. So that makes sense. Sure. All right, Riley. Well, anything else before we let you go?
No, I'd just say if you're working 80 hours a week in your company, then you just need to fire yourself and you'll figure it out.
Well said. Okay, buddy. Thanks for coming on, and I'll let you get back to your day.
All right. Sounds good.
See you, man. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.